You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and whether you're a mom to a human, an animal, or a Tamagotchi, you're about to get thrown so many hacks that'll help you take the hell out of being a health-focused parent that you won't even know what hack hit you the hardest. And I'll tell you this much, once you mom hack, you won't look back. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. I am pumped that one of my favorite plant party products on the planet is sponsoring this episode. If you've spent but a few seconds skimming my Instagram or binge watching my YouTube channel, which you should, by the way, if you haven't, but when you do, you'll see that Sun Warrior Plant Protein Powder is the Kanye to my West, the Bees to my knees, the Wilson to my Castaway, something I would not want to live without. When I'm looking for a way to make my smoothies actually fill me up so I don't need a follow-up snack a few minutes after finishing my smoothie, I blend in Sun Warrior because I don't want to get bloated, gassy, or feel crappy after consuming protein powder. I use Sun Warrior. Because I am not a fan of protein powders with weird, chalky textures and nasty flavors, I use Sun Warrior. See, it's no wonder I blend Sun Warrior protein powder into every smoothie I make and bake it into almost every baked good I bake. If you want some recipes for doing the same, head to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/partyinmyplants. Click subscribe and you'll get an epic, easy Sun Warrior plant protein recipe in your inbox every month. And if you want to get your mitts on Sun Warrior for 15% less than the rest of the world pays to get their mitts on it, just use the code PARTYINMYPLANTS at checkout on their site, sunwarrior.com. Again, in case you sneezed as I said that, I said you can use code PARTYINMYPLANTS at checkout on sunwarrior.com to save 15%, my friend. The end. Of the sponsorship thing. I mean, let's get into the meat of the episode, or not meat, the tofu of the episode. Today's guest seems like a woman who has it all figured out. That's probably because Dr. Daria Long is that woman who has it all figured out. This is a gal who's a successful ER doctor, and on top of that, a regular media expert, an author, and a mom. Or a mommy. I don't know what her kids call her. I met Daria backstage at the Dr. Oz show. She was this little peppy little lady who at first glance from my peripheral in the makeup chair, I figured was some kind of Zumba instructor about to make Dr. Oz all sweaty on TV. But then I learned that she's a graduate of Harvard and Yale and someone Dr. Oz refers to as the Make Life Better for Women doctor. Dr. Daria's brand new book, Mom Hacks, is a simple, digestible, and to-the-point guide for moms buckling under the pressure of raising little humans while maintaining the health of your regular-sized human self. Oh, and if you're only a mom to an animal or a snake plant, don't skip this chat because this sucker here is stuffed with tangible advice that'll leave you deep breathing while saying, I've got this. Which, deep breath, you do. Buckle up, baby. This is a good one. Daria, thank you so much for coming on the Party in My Plants podcast.
Thank you so much, Talia. I'm thrilled to be here.
I just want to say that you were 2 minutes late. Not even. I called you at like 3:16. We were scheduled for 3:15. And you apologized for your tardiness. And I was shocked.
Yes, I am a good Southern girl. You will be getting an apology letter in the mail because that's what my grandmother would expect.
Well, this makes a lot of sense, you know, in pertaining to what we're going to talk about today, because you balance a lot and you have a lot going on. And so for 2 minutes for you to feel like that was late really shows me how precise you are about your life and how organized you are. And I love it. And that was just proof of concept right then and there. So I'm ready to roll.
Well, Talia, I also just know you, everybody else is busy. 2 minutes of your time is valuable. So I want to be conscientious of that.
Thanks. Well, I was just browsing Instagram while I was waiting for you. So, you know, doing highbrow things. So let's start with, you know, your journey here. I think that's a great starting place because your journey towards what you do now in terms of writing your book and helping women make their life and health better and that balance really started with your own freaky health scare. So you were a patient dealing with an autoimmune arthritis that went from running daily, you know, to barely being able to walk. So tell me what happened. That sounds terrifying. That sounds tragic and horrific. What happened?
It was two really weird, random health scares kind of in a row. First was out of the blue, I developed this really bad ovarian cyst. Never had had a problem with anything like that. And they said, finally, we're going to have to go into the operating room. We're going to have to operate on you and just fix it. And I woke up from surgery 3 hours later and they said, we had to remove the entire ovary. It's gone. You have one left.
How old were you?
25 at the time. And so that was an adjustment of, you know, what does this mean for my health now? I had been perfectly healthy up until that point, didn't have anything wrong with me. Several months later, I was in my intern year. And exactly as you mentioned, I woke up one morning and my hands and feet and ankles and knees and every joint was swollen. And like my fingers were so swollen, they were like twice their normal size. We didn't know what was going on. We ended up going to a bunch of second opinions. I drove to Boston, got to Boston, and my joints were so stiff. I realized I'd left my car unlocked and I didn't go back because it was 50 feet away and my pain was so bad that I couldn't walk 50 feet. I just didn't even care.
And this is someone that runs every day.
Right,
and
exactly.
High energy, and this just came out of nowhere.
Yes. So they ended up diagnosing me with autoimmune arthritis, a psoriatic actually, and put me on medication. So I was giving myself injections twice a week, which to my patients, to everybody out there who is diabetic or having to give themselves injections more than that, I was a wimp. So it opened my eyes to what people have to do.
Yeah.
It was really amazing. But so,
well, at this point, are you a doctor? Because you're an ER doctor right now.
Yes.
Were you still in medical school? Where were you in your life?
I was in my intern year of medicine. So it's like the worst, most stressful time of your life. And surprise, I developed an autoimmune condition.
Were you at Yale? Is this when you were at Yale?
I was.
Mm-hmm. Fancy pants. Nice. So it goes medical school and then you do the internship after that, the intern year?
Yes, exactly. So you do medical school and then you do residency. And I was weird. I threw in business school because I like to keep people confused. But just keep my parents on their toes.
Wow.
But yeah, you usually do medical school and then you do residency. And when you're in residency, you're a doctor, but you're not finished with your training. That's like part of the like 12 years it takes to make me a doctor. And I'm not actually joking. It was 13 years, including college from the time I graduated high school, 13 years of college, med school and training.
Wow.
But let's not get into that.
Okay. That sounds stressful. I'm going to develop
something. I know. That's making me feel old. So change subject. But anyway, so it was a call to action because I ended up going on this medication. It fixed my symptoms, but now I'm on this injectable medication. And again, I'm kind of being told, well, this is the way it's going to be for life. And so I started doing, as you are an expert in this, you probably would have told me, well, if had you and I known each other at the time, we could have spoken, but I didn't. So I started changing my diet, you know, cutting out sugar, changing how I slept, changing a lot of things about stress and everything else. And eventually was able to wean off the medications and come off them altogether.
Wow. Now, as a doctor in medical school, were you taught that diet would help you? Or was this something you're like, you know what, let me just like go out on a whim here and like focus on my stress and food?
It was the latter.
Yeah.
And
that's so messed up.
You know, there's so much to learn in medical school. I get it. We have so much to learn, but we really do. You need a lot more. I mean, 80% of chronic disease is due to our lifestyle. It's due to what we put in our mouths and whether we're exercising and our stress. And so
that's crazy.
We didn't know as much even 10 or 15 years ago as we do now. But yes, I was told when I told somebody I'm cutting out dairy, gluten, sugar, and salt out of my diet to see if it helps my arthritis, I was told by both physicians and lay people, literally was told that will never work.
Wow.
So, and it worked.
I just, it's crazy.
It was frustrating. And I'm a big fan of Western medicine. Obviously, I'm trained in it. But I truly believe that it is not the full picture. When we are sick, then Western medicine is the very best thing in the world. But there's a lot, so much we can do up until the point that we can get sick to get back to well, that I'm so glad you're talking to people about it. Now I'm trying to talk to people about it too. Yeah. So it was so eye-opening.
Wow. So that's incredible. So then you took matters into your own hands, took control, got off the meds. Amazing. And then you became an ER doctor and then had kids and realized like, whoa, like it's hard to be a mom and a person and an ER doctor and healthy and be healthy for my kids and have my kids be healthy. And that's what got you into wanting to, you know, pivot slight. Well, like kind of have two lives where you're an ER doctor, but you also are incredibly passionate and hardworking at helping women and moms like get their shit together.
Well, thank you. And you're right. It's hard to be a mom and be anything. Yeah. So the reason I wrote this was, so then I'm an ER doctor and I realized that when I'm in the ER, looking at those double doors, whatever comes through them, I know that I've got this, I can handle it. But then I was pregnant and became a mom and saw all my friends who are moms. And I realized we didn't have that. I've got this in our own lives. And very often I felt very much, I don't got this. And I thought, how can I take those lessons and that mindset in the ER if I've got this? And so that's where Hacks came out of. That's why I said, okay, I'm going to create a system. I have access to all this information, these resources. I'm going to share with moms what I've learned to give all moms that feeling of I've got this.
Yeah, that's in their awesome. Lives. That's so cool. I mean, to hear from someone who saves lives for a living and feels that when those double doors open, like, I got this, to hear you honestly say, but at home, I didn't feel like I got this. I mean, that is so, I'm not a mom, but even my, you know, stomach sank a little in a good way. Like, I relaxed a little as you said that, like, oh, so it's okay to not feel like you got this. It's normal, because if you got this in such a high pressure job, but not at home, then like, it's okay for normal people to not feel like they got this. And I appreciate you making that okay.
Oh, thank you. It is. It's not just okay. Like, that's the natural order of things. I mean, come on. And I think it's important. I've got this doesn't mean it's not the like have it all or have everything in any way, because that's such an ideal that would be wonderful. But, you know, I've got this is something realistic that we can all aim for. Just like when I have I've got this in the ER doesn't mean that the ER is quiet and all the patients are well and that everything's perfect. It means that amidst the chaos, you can handle it.
I love that. I love that. So then you started working on mom hacks and you have a book coming out. Talk to me about the word hack, because I feel like that's kind of a slippery slope kind of term. You know, some people are like, hack, but like, it's also a really sexy word where everyone's like, I want a hack. So why did you choose the word hack?
So you're right. Hack has two meanings and sometimes multiple meanings. And even my dad was like, I don't get it. What are you hacking? And so I think you can tell the age of people. It's like, do you hear Yanny or Laurel? Do you know what a hack is? Don't you know what a hack is? So the reason I got it, I mean, people have joked all the time that ER doctors are kind of like the MacGyvers of medicine. It's like finding the little shortcuts. The reason I came up with the hacks is, you know, as a mom and anybody, whether you have children, whether you have dogs or work or whatever it is, none of us have time to even like pee in peace anymore. Let alone if you're a mom, you don't even get to pee in private. So I knew I can't write a 350 word page novel for moms. They're not going to have time to read it. So how can I put this in the very shortest tidbits, most digestible things that people and moms can read and do? And so that's how hacks came, because I would take a problem that I or my girlfriends or my patients were having and say, okay, how do I find some little mini solution to it? What's a little golden nugget I can find where there's the least amount of work with the biggest impact? And then the way the book's structured, it's nutrition, exercise, sleep, and stress. You go through the table of contents, you can choose the section that appeals to you, start there. And if all you do is one hack, the goal is that you feel better.
I love it. I love it. And it's a thin book. I've held it in my hands. You're right. It's very not intimidating.
I think I spent as long cutting words out of it as I spent writing it. So it's like a contest, like a competition against myself. I was like, yes, I cut 380 words today and it still makes sense.
That's hard to do.
All bulleted. Like, it's bulleted as much as possible to make it just really quick, high yield, read through it, figure out what works for you, and get back to your day.
So let's talk about some of the hacks. I don't even know where to start. There's so many. I mean, let's go into stress first, because as you said, you know, once you focus on stress and food, which we can go into as well, you know, your symptoms were really alleviated. So what are some hacks you have around the topic of stress?
So many. And you're right. The reason I wrote all, included all four categories, because they're all intertwined.
Yes. I know. It's kind of hard to separate them.
And as you know so well, what you eat impacts your stress levels, and how stressed you are impacts what you eat. It's a full circle.
Yeah.
So,
and eating when you're stressed is bad.
Yes.
And being stressed about what you eat is bad. So yeah, I mean, and then if you're stressed, you don't want to exercise, but exercise helps with stress. Mm-hmm. And then when you exercise, you need to eat right. And if you eat wrong, then it can affect your exercise. So it's just big web of everything. Now I'm stressed, just yelling.
Exactly. Like, let's bring back. So now you need a hack. Let's do this.
Give me a hack. But
just to add that women who are more stressed, there were some studies that showed two groups of women, those who had higher cortisol and stress levels, no matter when they ate the same amount, had higher waist circumference. So stress literally turns on your fat storage switch. So let's short circuit it. And so a couple of different things. One is just like a little breathing exercise. Now this one was really short, but figuring out like, how do I just slow myself down in the moment? Because especially in the ER, you can't freak out in the ER when you have 80 different things going on. So do you want to do a little breathing exercise with me? It takes 12 seconds.
If it's only 12 seconds, I can spare that.
Excellent. I know. That's why I was like, I don't have time for anything longer than that. Okay. 12 seconds. So you can close your eyes or leave them open, whatever, relax yourself. All we're going to do is you're going to inhale for 4 seconds, hold it for 4 seconds, let it out for 4 seconds, and then we're going to stop. So ready? I want you to inhale 2, 3, 4, hold it 2, 3, 4, let it out 2, 3, 4. Do you feel any better?
I do. At all?
Good. Okay. That was just a little thing. And sometimes I swear it takes me 3 or 4 of those in a row to start to sit in. So there's a couple of different breathing things, instant relaxation techniques. So when you're in that moment to bring you down, which are things that I use in the ER to keep myself calm, because my patients, my staff, they look to me, and just like your kids look to you, and you know, your employees look to you. So you staying really calm is important. But then switching from that, I don't know how you are about this, but I am really bad with that inner critic voice.
Mm-hmm.
So that inner critic, I mean, she's a mean girl. That inner critic says things, the things we say to ourselves, if somebody else published them, I mean, they would be taken off of Twitter. They'd be kicked off.
Right.
They'd probably have somebody, a restraining order against them. So, you know, inner critic, one of the things was identifying that inner critic and kind of learning some of the signs so that you know when you start to hear that voice, just starting by labeling her.
Yeah.
And just saying, like, that's my inner critic. And even if you, because it pulls you down in a circle. And then once you can do that, then you start to challenge her. Like, is that true? Like, is that true that since I forgot to send my daughter with her costume today for a Halloween parade, that does that really mean I'm the world's worst mom? Like, does that really mean that? And what
I forgot my dog's birthday last week.
Oh, see, world's worst dog.
And I literally was like, at first I was like, oh, no big deal. Like, whatever. He's just a dog. He doesn't know the date. And then I'm like, wait, if I forget my dog's birthday, does that mean I'm going to forget my kid's birthday when I have a kid? Oh my God, I'm going to be the worst mom ever. Should I not have kids? Oh my God, I'm a mess.
You needed a little bit of all you're supposed to say is that even true? Just ask yourself that. And sometimes it's like a little bit like, breaks. Is that even? And then you're like, wait, no, that's absurd.
Yes.
Or try the, is that even true? Or try to say like, if you were telling this to your best friend or to me, had you called me, what would we have said to you?
Right. You wouldn't be like, yep, forgetting your dog's birthday means you shouldn't be a mom. You're just unqualified.
Exactly. You're done. You're done. Just hang it up right now. When that inner critic starts to go on and you've labeled her as such, either say, is that even true? Or you can say it in more colorful words if you want to. It is inner monologue after all. Or just say like, what would my best friend say?
Yeah.
Just like try to put a little bit of, just a little bit of objectivity. Because otherwise, just as you said, we get into that spiral.
Does that, I mean, I can't even imagine what life is like for you at work. I mean, we're not dealing with like forgetting a dog's birthday. We're talking about like forgetting to remove like a scalpel from a person or something. Yeah. I don't know. But like, is that really something that works for you in these like really intense life and death situations?
So it does. And for us in the ER, so a year or two ago, there was a woman who came into the ER, and I was working this night at a little satellite hospital. So I was the only doctor that I knew of in the entire hospital. And this woman came in and she was like, I think I'm in labor. And we get a lot of these, and usually like, you're fine. You're not in labor. You're in early labor. You have time to make it to the main hospital. Mm-hmm. And so I went in to do a quick exam on her. I had this lovely British charge nurse. So she's just very relaxed because she is assuming this poor lady is just probably, you know, just a little bit anxious. Mm-hmm. And I look and the baby's crowning. Like, this woman's having the baby and she's having it right here. And not only that, the cord was wrapped twice around the baby's neck.
Oh.
So there's nobody else there. So I call the nurse over to get her attention, trying to like face be very calm, but try to get her attention. She looks and realizes, she mouthed, oh, S-H-I, you know, to me. And then we both turned to the mom because the mom couldn't panic. If the mom panicked, then this could be catastrophic. So very much what I focus on was the breathing. Keep my breathing slow. What they say to us in the hospital is, when you get to a code, which is a crisis, take your own pulse first. Wow. That's true whether you're a doctor or you or a mom, any one of us. Take your own pulse first.
I love that. That's wonderful. That's so, it's kind of like how everyone makes the analogy, like put your own oxygen mask on first, like on the airplane. But I like yours better because it's more original.
Oh, thank you. And the take your own pulse first isn't putting yourself first. It's just note how your body is responding right now. Because if you are anxious and flipping out, you won't operate at your best. So that's one. And then focus on what needs to be done next. Again, this applies whether you're in the ER, whether you have a huge to-do list and you're just like, I don't even know where to start. Say we have the ABCs, because it's literally, you don't move and don't think about the next step until you've done the very first step.
Mm-hmm.
And because otherwise we get overwhelmed, right? We just think of all the tasks we have to do. So same thing. And with this woman, I thought, next step, get the cord off the baby. Like, that was the only thing I thought of. And so I was very calm towards her because I was breathing. So I could say to her, like, great job. Now take a break. I want you to rest because you're doing so well. While I was ferociously trying to get the cord off, eventually got the cord off, delivered the baby. Dad walks in because he's just been, poor guy's been parking the car.
Oh my God.
Hi, Dad, you have a boy. Welcome. Want to cut the cord? Wow. It was, ended up being this beautiful scenario. And it just goes to show, just no matter what, we can all have that.
Mm-hmm.
We can all have that. I've got this feeling. Take your own pulse. Just do the next step you need to do. And that's how you make your way through whatever it is that you're handling.
That's incredible. That's awesome. I love that. That's amazing. Good for you. Good job. You also talk about congratulating oneself. I love that. Tell me more about that. How does one do that? I mean, I know that's like so simple and like something we like learn as children, like, but I feel like as adults, we're not often told to congratulate ourselves.
Yeah, this is huge. So our brains are wired to look for the negative. I mean, if you think about it, thousands of years ago, a shadow could be a saber-toothed tiger or a feuding warlord. And, don't check me on the anthropology of that. I don't know if saber-toothed tigers were there thousands of, when they were there. So just go with me. but you had to assume the worst, fight or flight and get away. So our brains are wired for that, for survival. But in today's world, most of us don't have a tiger chasing us or somebody, chasing after us. So we see that tone-deaf email or bad traffic or that annoying call from your mother/mother-in-law/insurance company, whatever it is, your brain reacts in the exact same way. So it goes into this fight or flight, everything's bad. And most of us as a result are running at this really high level of fight or flight, chronic stress and negativity all the time because that's the way our brain is wired.
I had no idea. I didn't know that we're like actually wired to see the negative for our protection. That makes so much sense. But I've never heard anybody say that. I've just heard everyone always be like, oh, how come I get like 1,000 great comments and one bad one and I only focus on that? And then I hear like, the big picture answers on that. But I've never heard the science. And that's awesome and makes so much sense. And it kind of takes us off the hook slightly for that being what we gravitate towards doing.
Exactly. So it also says, okay, then now I can know what the problem is. Now I can know what to do. And that was something mm-hmm. that I was digging. That's why I loved researching for this book, because I had those aha moments. Mm-hmm. And so what you have to do is you really have to start kind of rewiring your brain to start looking for the positive. And there's a couple of different ways you can do that. But one is just being cognizant of it. Mm-hmm. But number two, that's why people talk about gratitude so much. Uh-huh. And that's a hack in the book. And why, you know, again, it's not just, you may have heard it, it's a nice to think, write down your three things you're thankful for that night.
Yeah.
What it does is it means that now during the entire day, after doing this for a few days, your brain starts to look for things to be grateful for, because you're mentally preparing for that night when you have to write them all down.
Yes.
So now, instead of your brain looking around saying, 90% of my brain is focused on what do I need to worry about? There's some little sliver of your brain that's saying, ooh, what's positive that I can start to look for? Wow. So you truly start to rewire your brain that way. Another way that I do, because you're in the media world, we're both in the media world, you get a lot of no's, right? Like for every one yes, you've probably gotten like 300 no's.
Yeah.
So I've started to keep a list. Every time during the day I get like a really good thing, like that little thing that makes you a little fist pump, or just a small good thing, I write it down. So then the next time the no comes, because you know it's going to, and I feel bad about myself and I start to go down that slippery slope of this is never going to work, I go back to that list.
How is that different from a gratitude list?
It's kind of like a gratitude list, but I'm doing it in real time. My poor little brain doesn't always remember everything tonight.
Totally.
So it's okay, a gratitude list. So you can do it either at night or you can do it in real time when the things occur.
I love that.
Whichever one works for you.
Yeah. I mean, I sometimes will screenshot like really nice comments people send me. When you feel so discouraged, you need to rely on that stuff. But going back to the gratitude list, I think that's so helpful to hear, because everyone's told, do gratitude journal, blah, blah, blah. You know, but like the science, again, I'm so lit up by the science, because it makes so much sense that if every night you have a routine to like have to write down a few things you're grateful for, then you have to notice those things.
Yes,
and the more you do that at night, the more you will notice them in the moment to be like, oh, cool, this is something to write down tonight. And then the more, like you said, you'll look for it, which is awesome.
We see what we look for. I mean, that is the truth. We are, you know, Buddha said, with our thoughts, we make the world, which makes me sound very Zen that I'm quoting the Buddha, but it's true. And we can really change our thoughts by what we start to look for.
That's awesome. Amazing. I mean, this mind stuff, the stress stuff is incredible. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you want to leave us with, or we can talk about like sugar and stuff like that?
Let's see. Another one I love that I have to do a lot is assume positive intent.
Okay.
So envision this. Just envision you're driving down the highway. Maybe it's Atlanta 285 perimeter, just so we amp it up a little bit. you're driving down the highway. Somebody swerves in front of you. You have to go onto the shoulder to avoid being hit. Then the same car swerves the entire other way across three lanes of traffic, nearly hitting all these other different cars, exits, and has nearly caused a wreck. I mean, what's going through your body? Even as I'm telling you that, like you probably like your fists are a little clenched right now.
Yeah, my stomach's
right.
Turning.
You're pissed. Like that idiot was probably like what, texting or looking at their phone or something. Like you're mad at them, right? Mm-hmm. Now, what if I told you that the driver of the car was a mom and that her baby was choking in the back seat and she was trying to exit to save her baby?
Hmm.
That changes. Like you physically probably had a different change.
Mm-hmm.
I give that as an example because we have things happen all day long, text, email, things where we don't know the person's intent.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's that negative brain. We may start to assume that they did something intentionally or stupid or, you know, unintelligently or irresponsibly. But the reality is most of the time we'll never know somebody's motivations.
Yeah.
So you can assume that they are bad and that makes you feel really crappy. Or what if you can assume positive intent? Maybe it wasn't out of some intention to hurt you or something irresponsible. Maybe there is something else going on. You never know. You never know what somebody else is struggling with. So try when you have, I try to do this when I, you know, I have this happen with patients, to assume that there is some positive reason or at least some neutral reason that a person's behaving the way they are. Most of the time we'll never find out because we may not have another interaction with them, Or if we do find out, it opens us to be a lot more curious as to try to understand why somebody's being that way.
Yes. Living in New York City, I have to do that a lot. I mean, I encounter a million people just like walking down the street, and there's a lot, you know, there's loud people, there's people bumping into you, there's people that stop at the top of the subway and don't move. There's people like doing crazy shit all the time. And I often, you know, say to myself, you know, that person could have just gotten diagnosed with cancer and is coming home from the doctor right now.
Yes, you are doing this.
I really do try to do this because my husband's mom, like 2 years ago, passed away from cancer. And I mean, we would go visit her in the hospital and then just come home. And like coming home, I was one of those people who was, I mean, I wasn't like bumping people. I was just sitting on the subway with sunglasses on, like really depressed. And I was just thinking like, oh my God, what if there are other people on the subway right now that are encountering this? So you never know what somebody just, they could have just gotten broken up, could have filed for divorce, could have gotten fired. You know, you never know. So I often try to practice that too.
I've never known
it was doctor prescribed.
Totally doctor prescribed. And I think one of my first times I realized is I was taking care of a patient in the ER, and it was a young child, and he didn't have anything. He had a small cut, but the family, they were mean to me, and they were mean to the whole staff. And it really made me upset. And at one point I was like, I'm going to go say something. Cause they had said something to one of the nurses and it made her cry. And I was like, I'm going to say something. And I didn't say anything. I kind of held my tongue. I just tried to be like super polite and take care of them and, you know, as quickly as possible and just tried to be super neutral. And then a month later, we got a letter from them, and they said that they had lost their other child about a year before they had been in the ER with us, and they apologized.
Wow.
Tell you, you never just never know.
Never know.
You never know. So that's why I try to assume positive intent, assume everybody has some struggle because they usually do.
It is true.
And it helps you both. It helps your interaction with them. And even if you never find out, it helps you.
Helps your pulse.
Exactly. So.
Wow. Amazing. Wow. Okay. I didn't even know that we would be discussing these like deep spiritual principles, but I love it. Quoting Buddha. What's next? Gandhi?
I mean, I have to be full disclosure. I don't normally otherwise quote Buddha. So anybody's listening, like, wow, she must sit around and meditate all the time. Like that's like the only time. So I full disclosure.
That's okay. You didn't have to disclose that.
That's okay. I think it's only fair. We want people to know the reality.
Yes. Pardon me for a sec, but have you met Ned? I love you if you've got that reference. And I love Ned, but Jesse needn't worry because Ned isn't a secret second husband. He's premium small batch hemp products that go from seeds in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado to bottle that you can use wherever the heck you live. I'm talking bottles of hemp oil, hemp body butter, and even hemp chapstick that my effed up East Coast winter lips are hella thankful for right now. Before you ask, why doesn't Ned just call its products CBD? I'll answer. Because of FDA regulations, only pharmaceutical companies can use the term CBD. So Ned's sticking to the rules by saying that their products are made from full spectrum hemp. But between you and me, we're talking CBD here, friend. Ned's organic, non-GMO, small batch products won't get you high. Sorry, but they will help as a sleep aid. They'll provide anti-inflammatory powers. They'll serve as a natural pain reliever. Been rubbing that body butter on my always sore feet, and they say, thanks, Ned. It'll help with anxiety. Yes, please, and thank you. And provide you with antioxidants on fleek. I am admittedly a CBD noob, but you gotta believe this noob when she says that her experience with Ned's CBD is it works like ABC. Easy as 1, 2, 3. Simple as do, re, mi. And it really did help me with tons of anxiety that I was feeling as I was finishing my book, which I just did. Yay. Okay. You knew this was coming. You can save 15% on all your Ned needs and desires if you head to helloned.com/plants or use code plants at checkout on helloned.com. That's helloned.com/party to save 15% on our buddy old pal Ned's full spectrum hemp oils that won't get you high, but will nourish your body's endocannabinoid, fancy pants, system, which helps bring balance to your mind and your body. Thanks, Ned. See you at helloned.com/party. And now back to our episode. Well, one thing that you talk about being a reality is how motherhood doesn't have to come at the cost of women's health. Now, I'm not a mom yet. I have a dog mom, but I'm not a human mom. And so I didn't really know that that's a thing that people think about, that being a mom could come at the cost of your own health. So tell me more about that. Is there a strong correlation?
This bothers me so much. Yeah, and when I was pregnant, and I talk about this in the book, I was like 7 months pregnant at dinner with a friend. And I was talking about how like I couldn't run the same because my bump was getting in the way. And she kind of really harshly was like, yeah, well, you know, once you have a baby, you're never going to get to go to the gym again. And I gave me a pause, like, you know, what do you mean?
Yeah.
And so I started doing some research, and that was when it kind of became really shocking, was to find the data behind it. So for every child she has, a woman's risk of obesity rises by 7%, which is like, what? That's so not fair.
Okay. And I'm trying to process that. For every child you have, your risk for obesity rises 7%.
Rises by 7%. Huh. Mm-hmm. And then statistically, if you compare women, moms to non-moms and hold everything else equal, the moms will sleep less, eat more poorly, exercise less.
Yeah.
And so part of it's like, well, a lot of what made me so upset was that it seemed like society just kind of accepts this, that, okay, that's what happens. You have a baby and your health kind of goes and you never get your body back. You never feel exactly like yourself again or have energy. And either it's accepted sometimes or they blame the moms. Like the moms don't have enough willpower. They just need more intention. Or, you know, you hear all those lines like, just eat celery instead of chocolate or just something garbage like that.
Who says that? Does someone say that? Whoever says that, that's inappropriate. Like, celery sucks.
So inappropriate. Hey, I like celery.
Just by
itself?
No, no.
Okay, just celery by itself. No. Especially if you're like, if you're having a moment of like, I need
chocolate. Yeah, let me get freaking dental floss in watery vegetable form.
I know. They need to be like hit upside the head with celery. Yeah. But I was really tired of those messages. I had heard that same message when I had arthritis. I was told, this is the way it's going to be and you can't fix it. And I did. I fixed it. I found a way. And so I thought, you know what? If I fixed it then, what can I find out now? What solutions can I have? You know, I have this, I've got this in the ER. What solutions can I find to give moms, myself as a mom and every mom, that I've got this? And what's the easiest way I can create that for them?
Okay, you have to tell me everything because honestly, full disclosure, I was at my acupuncturist the other day and I was just chilling with my needles and I was like, hey, when I eventually have kids, I'm not in any rush, but when I eventually have kids, like how can acupuncture help? And we were like talking about it. And then he's like, but like, you should get on that. And I'm like, no, I'm going to wait at least till I'm 29. So at least until I'm like 33, then maybe I'll start trying. He's like, you know, fertility favors the youth. And then I started, like, I came running home to my husband. I'm like, oh my God, what do we do? I'm like, but I really want to have a full career. I really want to, like, you know, we have places to travel. We have so much to do. We don't want our life to stop because we have kids. And so even us are sort of wired for that, you know, idea that like you have kids and then how do I run a business when I have kids? How do I travel? How do I, you know, be happy and healthy and fit and whatever? Cause that's one of our reasons for not wanting kids right away. So I'm very curious to hear how you've debunked that, because if that's actually possible and I don't have to just buy into the notion that everything for yourself kind of sucks, minus the fact that you love another human being that you made when you have kids, like that'd be awesome.
Natalia, it is a wonderful time. So no, your life will be entirely different. It's kind of like, they call it matrescence. It's kind of like going through adolescence. Who you are when you go into motherhood is going to be an entirely different woman when you come out, but that doesn't mean you'll like her any less or like her lifestyle any less. Mm. So it's really important to note that. Now that said, I think you brought up two different issues. So there's that pressure on women of, oh my gosh, I'm getting older. My clock.
I'm 29. I'm like, I'm young. 33. He's like, I'm telling you. I'm like, what?
Whatever. And I was 34 when I had my first child.
Okay, perfect.
So, and on that one little ovary. So, left ovary. And I think you mentioned acupuncture. I actually used acupuncture, not with my first, but for my second, because they were a little bit worried from a fertility standpoint since I only had one. And now I was like really old because I was like 36. Just kidding.
Not senior really. Citizen. No, I know.
And so I did acupuncture for it. So I'm a big fan. I think there's absolutely evidence. And, you know, as you know, I mix Western, I'd like to cherry pick. I take the best from Western medicine, Ayurveda and integrative medicine and behavioral economics and psychology. I like to cherry pick all of those because, oh my God, in women today, we need all of that. Mm-hmm. So yay, gay for you for acupuncture.
Yay, acupuncture.
Okay. Even though I'm a wimp around needles, I was a little scared.
You're a wimp around needles.
I am. What? That's the weird thing. I have no problem handling needles, like in doing procedures. But to myself, when I had to give that injection myself the first time for my arthritis, I like was sure I had hit an artery. Like I thought I was going to die, you know, big baby.
Oh my God. Wow.
So that said, yes, we all worry about, am I going to have babies at the right time? Mm-hmm. And it has to be this perfect schedule because you are building this wonderful like nutrition and media empire. And you're like, well, I have to fit in the babies. When would they fit it in?
Right.
The reality also is that there is no perfect time.
Mm-hmm.
Or there is every time. I mean, I wouldn't say every time is a perfect time. But there are, you know, there's times that aren't so great, but, you want to wait until you feel ready, but at the same point,
you'll never feel ready.
Exactly. You see that positive test on the pregnancy thing and you're like, oh, blank. So this is happening. And you know, that happens too, no matter how excited you are, there's part of it like, oh my gosh, everything is going to change. So it's one of those things, you don't rush it, but you don't just push it off because you never are 100%. And you know, nobody ever knows how long it will take. I have some friends who said, we want to have a baby in a year, so we'll start now. And they got pregnant that day.
Oh my God.
And it could take longer. That's, especially for you, like you have such success. The crazy thing about getting pregnant is it's one of the few things that we really can't control, which can be, that was tough for me as a type A female. So I'm like, what do you mean I can't schedule this out? But so there's that. But then getting into it, like, for me, obviously my career, I was doing media before I had children, but my career has really changed in a wonderful way because of them. And, you know, it's given me an even more of a purpose and a fire to want to do this now for moms and for kids too. But yeah, they take up a lot of time. My day ends when my 4-year-old starts guilt tripping me about wanting to go play in her little bouncy house. So it's a balance, but it's a wonderful balance. So I wouldn't worry about it. And I wouldn't think that, you know, once we have children, we can't do X, Y, Z.
Yeah. Talk to me more about that. I mean, how does a new mom or any mom, you know, keep up with their own? I know you're an avid runner. So how do you keep running? I mean, do you just run with your little ones? How do you eat healthfully? What do you do?
Yeah. So this comes. So
how do you sleep?
Do we need to go back?
No,
12
I got it. I'll do it on my own.
This is why you'll be quiet for the next 12 seconds. I'll know you're breathing. So things do change. So for me, the one time, and a lot of studies have borne this out, is that the people who adhere most to exercise are the people who do it in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So
is that like a sign, like a doctor stated fact that you're telling me now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. This is a fact.
That's what I thought.
Are you implying that some of my other things I've said are not
no,
facts?
No, I just mean like, no, I'm just saying like my husband likes to work out in the afternoon / he always has a big struggle because the day things take longer than they should. And oh crap, I didn't get to the gym. Meanwhile, me over here, first thing I do in the morning is the gym. I just wanted to say my doctor friend said, I'm legit.
You can also tell him that I am with him.
That was not what I wanted to hear.
Sorry. Well, he doesn't have to hear this, right? Okay. So you can share whatever you want. I won't tell him. I am one of those people that like at the end of the day, I have that energy to burn from like just sitting at a desk or whatever.
Oh, wow.
I want to work out in the afternoon. I like that. But it just became too hard with the kids and I was dropping my workouts or I was trying to exercise and they made me feel guilty. So I started working out in the morning. So here's a couple things because I'm not a morning person. So, and I think I talk about this in the hacks that if you want to switch to a morning workout, don't say I'm going to get up tomorrow at 5 in the morning and run 4 miles. If you don't run 4 miles in the morning at all. Say I'm going to get up tomorrow. If you normally get up at 6:30, so I'm going to get up at 6 and I'm going to do jumping jacks or push-ups. I'm going to do something, or I'm going to do a 7-minute video, workout video, do something small and slowly. So now you're getting up at 6 and also really bright light the minute you get up, because you want to reset your body clock. So we can talk about that in a second. So now getting up at 6. Now you do that for about 4 weeks. After that, now you start getting up at 5:45. You can do a little bit longer. So you eventually build up. Then it doesn't hurt as much as a suddenly trying to change. And then do something that you like. So like I have a playlist and we have 5 mom hacks playlists. I have to plug these because I'm obsessed with them. So anybody who pre-orders the book, when they do, they go back to drdaria.com/momhacks, they enter their confirmation and we have all these different bonuses for them. One of which is my series of 5 different playlists. So there's like a pump up playlist and an exercise playlist and a relax playlist and a listen to music to listen to in the car with your kids playlist. So you're not just listening to Frozen on repeat.
Oh, cool.
So, and it's one of my favorites. And I would welcome anybody who has ideas for the pump up playlist or the running playlist, things they love. Like right now I have like Sly and the Family Stallone and something from and a ton from Sia and all just sorts of things.
Wow, you're a cool mom.
No, I also have like, let's see, what is it? Try Everything from Zootopia, because we listen to a lot of Disney.
Nice.
So
Moana. Yeah.
Oh, that is on my music in the car. Yes, that in Trolls, because Trolls is actually an album that my children and I agree on.
Uh-huh. Is that the one where Justin Timberlake has that song?
Nice. Exactly. And it's kind of funny because they have like Hello from like Lionel Richie's Hello, which of course my kids don't know at all. So they don't get the joke when the Trolls singing Lionel Richie.
That's funny.
And so to get to the morning, do it incrementally, which we talk more about it in the book, and then add something fun to it. Maybe that's the music. Maybe it's like reading your People magazine. Maybe it's talking to your, have a workout buddy, anything like that. Slowly get to morning. So now I really get up in the morning. The last 2 days I wasn't feeling well and I didn't wake up and run in the morning. And it's amazing. In 4 to 6 weeks or so, you'll find it totally screws with your day if you don't work out in the morning. Like you'll miss it.
Oh yeah.
So it really makes you. It has taken me, I am not a morning workout person, and now I love it.
Okay. Well, here's something I just want to add to that. I am a morning workout person, but I'm also not. So I do work out in the morning, but I'll procrastinate for like upwards of 2 hours for my morning workout. Like I am a morning person. Like I will get in my clothes. I will like drink my pre-workout. Like I'm ready to go, but I could just get myself involved in emails, a podcast, any work. I will do anything. I'll clean the entire house. I'll rearrange my medicine, my beauty stuff. I'll do anything possible to procrastinate. So even for me, who is a very passionate, quote unquote, morning worker outer, it takes an inner drive every single day to run or do whatever I'm working out doing, even though I love it. And so I just want to tell people, it's not like you just like a morning runner or whatever person just rolls out of bed and like puts on their shoes and it's like, bye. Like it's still a thing.
It's still work and it takes time to go do that. So that's important to say to people. It's not like we're not some weird freaks of nature that are like, oh my gosh, ice cream or run. I would love to go run, put away the ice cream. No,
right.
It is a decision that you have to make. But it's one of those, after you start to make it after a while, it just becomes the default. It's like, I don't question whether I put my seatbelt on when I get in the car. Mm-hmm. And there is one hack called temptation bundling, which can help make it more enjoyable. And I have seen this turn people who hated exercise into people who actually look forward to it. So temptation bundling. What you do is you take something like exercise you may not want to do and you bundle it with a temptation or indulgence. So maybe it's watching Game of Thrones or whatever show you like. Scandal's not along anymore, but whatever you like. Or it's reading People magazine or an addictive audiobook or a playlist. Whatever it is, you choose that indulgence. And then here's the thing. You only let yourself watch or listen or read it when you are exercising. Like that's the rule. So I do this with my playlist and I do this with People magazine. And I did this a little bit and then I read that this is like actually there's science behind it. So now I really do it. And it's crazy because it gets to the point my People magazine arrives in the mail and Talia, like I actually feel this urge at that point. Like I want to go run. Like I need to go know what's happening with Kate and Megan in the castle. Like I want to go run. So
that's cool.
You just have
positive
to do the
reinforcement. Sorry. Yes. That's awesome.
The only thing you can do is just don't let yourself cheat. You can only do it when you're exercising.
You're only cheating yourself.
There you go.
So I'm still really hooked on that stat you said earlier about how for every kid, your chance of obesity goes up 7%. Because I do feel like, well, A, there's this pressure. I mean, this is like two double-edged sword here, where there's this pressure that moms have babies and then they are supposed to, because all the celebrities are like, hey, I had a baby yesterday. Look at my bod. You know, I lost all the baby weight breastfeeding or whatever. And then in reality, the moms are like, I'm breastfeeding, but like I still haven't lost any weight. And so I feel like that's a real struggle for people. And I forget what the other edge of that sword is. Oh, but the other edge of the sword is that, like you said, you know, the chances of maintaining that weight or even packing on more go up with each baby. So how do you, what do you do?
All right. I'm so glad you brought up both of those things, because yes, you hear those celebrities and they're like, you know, every once in a while you see, and she like did the Victoria's Secret model runway or something,
yeah,
and
like
her
a
baby
week later.
At home, like 6 later. And you're like, what the heck?
Yeah.
I was one of those people. I nursed both my babies for about 13 months. I did not lose all my baby weight until after I was done nursing. So no, I was not one of those miraculous people who was like, oh, I just nursed and it just fell off. It doesn't. I was on CNN the other day. We were doing a segment. The anchor had a baby 9 months ago, and somebody had tweeted to her that you look pregnant, and she felt awful, and I got mad. And so, you know, I was sending her pictures. Like, here was me at 9 months after I had my baby, and like, I'm no longer wearing a maternity dress, but like, I could barely zip up that thing. Mm-hmm. So the reality is, some people will bounce back very quickly. And that's great. If you can do that, wonderful. But many don't. As long as you're doing, you know, a couple of pounds, you're moving in the right direction, that's fine. You don't, and you won't lose it all immediately necessarily. And you can't beat yourself up about that. So that's what I thought that was really important to share with moms. Like, there's all these ideals. I don't care what weight from a body image perspective. I just wanted to fit into my clothes and feel good in my skin. Totally. And that's what I want all moms to feel, whatever size that is for them. And then I think it's a lot of little things. Like for me, when I was nursing, I found that if I tried to really cut my calories, then my supply fell before my hip size fell, which was totally unfair. But that was the way it was. So I started doing time restricted eating. So I would just eat once my baby wasn't nursing at night. This was how I lost my baby weight. I would only eat within a 12-hour window. So say I had my breakfast at 8 a.m. I finished eating at 8 p.m. I didn't eat after that.
So this is like intermittent fasting.
Time-restricted eating is like the younger sibling who's a little more lenient than intermittent fasting.
I love that. Is that a soundbite you use on TV? That's amazing.
There you go. Again. It should be.
Do it more.
Like, and in time-restricted eating, like the best is if you only eat within a 9-hour window, but that can be really tough with kids. So for me, I aimed for 12 hours. If there were some days I could do eating within just a 9-hour window, I would. And so the science is amazing. Yeah, they did this study people and in mice. And even if you're eating kind of the same amount of calories, if it's in that smaller window, the mice lost weight. And what I tell people is, don't count your calories. I don't want people to count calories. I don't want them to go crazy. I talk a lot in the book about, like, I have the Dr. Daria Restore diet. It's like, is the whole foods and what to look for. And if you're kind of avoiding the processed foods and avoiding those things, then otherwise you really don't need to be counting your calories. Just eat within that window. And that's all I really want you to worry about for now.
Okay. So just again, so like this time-restricted eating would be like, you don't eat past 8 p.m. until 8 a.m.
Yes.
Like a 12-hour, or you stop at 9. Does it have to be 8? Or what if someone's like 9 to 9? Or like,
doesn't matter.
Doesn't really matter.
Earlier is a little bit better, because we still don't know exactly why this works.
Oh, okay.
There is some thought that it ties in with our circadian rhythm, which is our body clock. So if you're eating too late before bed, it can decrease the quality of your sleep. And we know what that does to your health. And it can kind of mess with your metabolism and melatonin and everything else. So I don't want people eating at like 9 and then going to bed at 10. Like, that's not good. You want to have your last meal within 2 to 3 hours of at least from bed.
That's really fascinating. Okay. That seems very doable. Like a 12-hour window.
It is. And again, it's like, aim, if there are days you can do a 9, you know, just eating in a 9-hour window, that's even better. But don't make yourself crazy. Aim for 12. And if you get a 9-hour window here or there, then perfect.
So a 9-hour window would be you just eat even earlier then.
Yes. So, or say a 9-hour window, say you eat breakfast after 10 a.m. and you finish by 7 p.m.
That's more, I eat really, really late in the days. Because while I'm procrastinating on my workout, I'm not eating. I just have like a morning greens with apple cider vinegar. And then I'm not, because I procrastinated for hours on my workout, I'm not done till like 11. And that's like when I eat.
You know, it's funny. We always are like, oh, breakfast is the most important meal day. You must have breakfast. Time-restricted eating suggests that may not be the case. I think everybody's a little different. And right. So finding also what works, because it's not like, I really don't think like breakfast was right and now it's wrong and now it's time-restricted eating. It's finding what works for you. If you're mm-hmm. starving, especially if you're nursing, that can be hard to go that long.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But if it works for you, then try it. And if it works, then great. The more power to you.
I feel like eating healthfully is something that is obviously very hard for any human, especially a mother human. Do you have any hacks around healthier eating with your family, healthier? I know you have some hacks on like rearranging pantries to be healthier, yes. Like help.
Okay. So this is best. And a lot of the hacks around nutrition are like that. I do talk about what you should eat, but I think a lot of us know most of what we should. There's a lot of misconceptions, a lot of crazy fad diets. As I know, you know, you're an expert in this, but I also talk about the how.
Yes. The how is more important in my opinion. Just eat more plants, eat less crap, and then, but the how is what holds people up on that.
Right. What did Michael Pollan say? Eat food, mostly plants, not too much.
Exactly.
Is that right? So a couple different things. So pantry intervention. So there was this a couple different crazy studies. They found that if chocolate is right next to you, you'll obviously eat a lot. If there is a single obstacle between you and chocolate, it's funny. I looked at a lot of behavioral psychology studies and they all use chocolate and usually M&Ms, which must mean that it's like the single food we cannot resist. If there's one obstacle, like if you have to get up out of your chair or the equivalent of like get up on a stool, you'll eat 70% less. And people in the studies don't need any more willpower.
Wow. Like what's an obstacle? Like,
so put up on a high shelf so that you actually have to get a stool.
Oh.
And if you just that simple act, even if the stool is right there, if you have to pull the stool over, you will eat less. Take those foods that you can't resist, just put them up on a shelf. And you, again, people are like, that can't help. I know it's up there. I swear to you, this works. And even if, think about it, if it only cuts your consumption by 30% without any additional willpower, that's great. That's a big difference. So take all those things that you can't refuse, put them up on a high shelf, it requires a stool. That's number one. On the flip side, take the foods that you do want to eat, put them in pretty glass or visible containers. It's another cool story. Google employees were eating way too many M&Ms, right? It's a theme, M&Ms. And they didn't know how to make them eat less. So what they did is they took the M&Ms. They didn't tell people anything, didn't tell them to eat less. They simply put them in opaque containers. And they put the healthier foods in clear containers. And in something like 7 weeks, their 2,000 employees ate 3 million fewer calories of M&Ms.
That's crazy.
Right? It's like, I was reading the research on this and I was like, are we humans? Like, is it that simple? Are we that easily influenced by our subconscious brain? And we are, apparently. So there was a lot in there about just like doing things that you're like, there's no way that'll work. It works.
That's fascinating. The height thing is interesting. Putting things up top. My popcorn, which is my, you know, I can't stop. Won't stop, is like at foot level. Like I just bend down and pick it up.
Oh yeah, no, that's a bad idea. My dog would be in that. But I had one mom that did this right around Halloween. She had was like 3 weeks after Halloween, I told her about this because they had been like rapidly consuming all their Halloween candy. She put it up there and then she told me like a month later, she's like, we haven't eaten any Halloween candy in like 2 months. Wow. So it's still there. You can have it, but you're not using your willpower because we exhaust our willpower.
Yes.
Willpower
is muscle. Yes, so, it's not. Yeah, you run out of it.
That's also why I work out in the morning, because I do think that you get tired and use your willpower. If you're procrastinating on your exercise, you're using willpower for 2 hours of deciding about when to go exercise.
I know.
From a habit standpoint, you need to make a cue. So I think you saw the book. So there's a lot about habit formation. So habit formation, all you need is like your point A, and then there's the action you do, which is point B. So find a cue and pair it and always exercise after that cue. Do it for 4 weeks or so, and it's going to become automatic. Maybe for you, it's like the moment you wake up or the moment after you've had your coffee or whatever. Mm-hmm. Have a cue and always exercise after that.
All right, I'm going to try that because this is getting out of control. And then I'm just sitting around in my workout clothes for 2 hours like a weirdo.
Yeah, that's
It's actually a learned behavior from my dad. So he works at home and he always has my whole life. And he would come downstairs, check an email, be in his bathrobe. And I'd see him at like 2 p.m. and he's like still in his bathrobe, like hasn't eaten breakfast. Is like, I'm going soon. I'm going to have breakfast soon. Going to work out. And I'm like, dude, what are you doing?
No, you got to start your day. That's the challenge of working from home. So yeah. Again, when you work from home, having those cues like, okay, I've dropped my kids off from school or my kids got on the bus. That's my cue. Work starts. That doesn't mean, so now that doesn't mm-hmm. mean I could log on to Amazon and start to do the returns that are sitting there or I go through mail or whatever. Mm-hmm. No, work starts. So like for me, my cue, my alarm goes off in the morning. I go work out. I don't do anything else before that starts.
Yeah, that's great. I love it. Okay. Is there any hack you have for making cooking easier?
So many. Oh my goodness, Ed, where to start? So
for a family, for kids, we'll specify picky kids.
Oh my God, there is some amazing research from Dr. Jerrica Berg up in Minnesota. What she researches is family dinners and how to make them easier for your family and like how to make it so that even like the pickier kids will eat well and then things like that. So a couple of different things. So family dinner, we know it's like really good for children's performance and all sorts of things, but it can be really hard to get everybody there together at the same time. So number one is when you cook, cook enough for two meals. Like leftovers yes. to me are the gift that
they're
keeps
the
on
best overs.
Yeah, the best.
I have like a whole section in my book that I'm writing that's due in a month, all about leftovers and all about how if you make any, make many.
Yes. Oh, good girl.
I know.
What they also found, what Dr. Berg found is that you don't have to, this is not Thanksgiving dinner every night. You can even buy takeouts. She said, just add one thing, like add a side vegetable. So maybe that's adding some hummus and raw vegetables or making a salad or again, microwaving some green beans and adding a little olive oil and a little bit of Parmesan cheese. Having that one side that you do, make sure that the family gets extra veggies. And that was associated with better health of the whole family from family dinner. So you can even buy everything else, but make one side.
Yes.
And then for your picky kids, you know, don't make a separate meal for them. I mean, what I serve is what everybody eats. We don't make anything separate for the child. Like my older child is a little more difficult. My two-year-old will eat anything that doesn't eat him first. So it's like a very different dynamic. Or some nights my again, I do believe that our children keep changing their tastes because they don't want us as parents to become too confident in our parenting skills. So it's really important to like not take it to heart. But kids need a lot of repetition, sometimes like 15 times. But the more you can get them, don't take it to heart. I tell my daughter she has to try a bite. If she doesn't want any more, that's fine. And now that she's old enough, I tell her, it's okay you don't like it this time. Sometimes it takes 15 times. Hmm. Call me in 13 times. And so keep doing that. Keep offering it. And one last thing is like have your child be alone with a veggie. Is one thing that Dr. Tracy Mann told me. And so that means when dinner isn't ready yet, or sometimes true confession, I will lie. If dinner is even ready, I'll be like, oh, dinner's not ready yet. Here's your salad. Mm. So you take a child who's hungry. Sure, they would prefer rice because what child wouldn't? But they're like, okay, I have sugar snaps and carrots and these things. And I always have lots of veggies available. So they get to choose two or three veggies for their salad. And they eat it. You'll be surprised. You'll be shocked what your child will eat.
When they're desperate.
Yes.
That's amazing. That's a hack if I've ever heard one.
Just play it cool. One night all I had was cabbage and my daughter had never eaten it. And she was like, I want carrots. I was like, sorry. All I have was cabbage. I looked and I didn't say anything. I handed it to her. And Talia, she waited about a minute and then she ate it. And I was like secretly like fist bumping behind the couch, like my child's eating cabbage.
That's amazing.
And
that's really funny. That's actually also a hack for ourselves.
Yes.
Self-hack.
Exactly.
I love that. That's self-hack. Amazing. Oh my God. Yeah. This was so, oh my God, this was the best. So much information. And I know there's a bajillion more hacks where this came from in your book. So I hope everybody literally gets their hands on it. And I'm so stoked for it to be out in the world.
Thank you. Me too.
Okay. A few last rapid fire questions. What is your favorite plant, speaking of all the veggies, to eat?
Oh my gosh. Watermelon.
Ooh, good one. You live in Atlanta, right?
Yes. So. I know, but exactly. My last meal would be lobster and watermelon. So it's like Boston and South. So there you go.
Oh, are you from Boston?
No, I'm from Chattanooga, Tennessee. But I spent a lot of time in Boston.
Oh, cool.
Many years.
For school and stuff. Mm-hmm, okay, your most used kitchen tool.
Ooh. Probably my chopping block, my cutting board.
Mm, cool, that's good. Your favorite planty restaurant.
Ooh, we have True Food Kitchen here by Dr. Weil that I love.
I've heard of that.
Really, really yummy.
All right, in Atlanta.
Yes.
I'm going to go. I'm going for a wedding in May, so I'll have to hit that up.
Come, I will take you. We will go.
Okay, yay. True Food Kitchen in Atlanta. Okay. What is a book besides your own that has really inspired you in some awesome way?
Oh my gosh, so many. I just finished reading The Invention of Wings, which by the same author who wrote The Secret Life of Bees. Both of them are absolutely wonderful books, really eye-opening and really exceptional books.
Cool. And I got to ask you, what's your favorite hack in the book?
Oh my God, I can't choose a favorite hack. That's like asking me my favorite child, which actually depends on when you ask me what day of the week would change. I like there's stuff in How to Break a Sugar Habit because I was a sugar fiend. So that was a major deal for me on like the simple steps of just like not killing yourself to break a sugar habit.
What's one hack from that?
So one is instead of just saying like, I'm not going to eat donuts because me telling you, if you have a sugar essentially dependence, I could say, I'm going to give you $10 million not to eat this donut, but your brain is so wired. I may as well say, hold your breath underwater for 20 minutes for $10 million. You can't do it. For that is to go after the hidden sugar first, because hidden sugar is in 74% of our foods in the grocery store, mm-hmm. your barbecue sauce, your ketchup, all these things. So you're eating a burger. And what are you telling your brain is that it has to be sweet because there's so much sugar in your ketchup. So I tell people first, before you go after the donuts, is to cut out all the hidden sugars first. Do that for 2 weeks. You're going to change your taste buds. Ooh. And your tastings and your cravings naturally. Again, that's the whole point of hacks. It's like, how do I make it really easy for myself? Because we don't have time to deal with otherwise. It will naturally start to change. And you may crave donuts less and crave whatever your sweet is less. And then you can go after the overt sources of sugar.
That's great. Brilliant. What a hack to end on. Woo-hoo! Thank you so much. Where can everybody find you, stay connected to you, get more hacks out the wazoo?
I love that because I want to know what works for people or what they need. And I'd love to hear that. I love that feedback. So Dr. Daria, so it's DrDarria. There's two R's in Daria. And I'm Dr. Daria on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or just drdaria.com. Again, two R's there.
Two R's after the doctor. Amazing. Well, thank you so much. I'm so glad that the Dr. Oz gods connected us.
I am so glad. What a great way to meet. We met at Dr. Oz. So thank you so much, Talia. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. Told you this chat was packed with a heck of a lot of hacks. Don't worry if you didn't jot them all down. I've done the honors for you in the show notes over at partyinmyplants.com/131. And even beyond that, Dr. Daria's book, Mom Hacks, is full of so many more of them. You can find her book wherever books are sold or wherever the link in the show notes page at partyinmyplants.com/131 takes you, which is to Amazon. Spoiler alert. If you can think of another human mom, dog mom, or plant mom who might benefit from this episode in their ears, please, for the love of watermelon, share it with them. And again, a recap of this chat, more info about Sun Warrior and Ned. Have you met Ned? And a heck of a lot more stuff that makes healthy living not totally suck is waiting for you at partyinmyplants.com/131.